Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
In high school, I had interest in Marquette, but they told me I wasn't athletic enough to play in the Big East. Hence, my pettiness.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball, on Facebook at facebook.com/RedRockBasketball and on Patreon at patreon.com/RedRock_Bball. What I'm going to be doing in today's show, another break from the season preview podcast series. I'm going to be talking about the Basketball Monster projections, which were released last week, and I've had people with many questions about the projections, the process behind the projections, individual player questions. So I'm going to address all of that in today's show. I talked a little bit about it in the Point Guard Tiers podcast yesterday with Matt Smith, so you can have a listen to the start of that show if you want to hear some more information on the projections. But what we're going to be talking about is that in today's show. So
let's get to it.
Got a big week as well coming up this week. I'm going to have a 12-team preview podcast coming this week, so you're going to be smashed with podcast content, and it's going to be enough to hopefully get you ready for any drafts that start in the early stages of September, like the Red Rock Listener Leagues, which drafts are starting in the next 7 to 10 days, I believe those drafts are starting. So get most of that information out there for you guys in that time frame. Again, remember that Basketball Monster is open for memberships, and what you get with the memberships, obviously, is the projections, which is going to help you on your draft day. Trade analyzers, team analysis, you can see your relative strengths and weaknesses on your team. We update these projections every day. There's always things being tinkered through the preseason, all every day through the regular season as well, to adjust to things that are going on in the NBA. So, now, I've used Basketball Monster plenty of times before I even before I started working there. The draft tracker is sensational. Gives you dynamic values of players depending on what stats have gone off the board, position values depending on what positions have gone off the board, statistical scarcity. And that's one of the things I really, really look at when I'm drafting over on Basketball Monster with the draft tracker, is the statistical scarcity. So if I see a guy who's, say, really strong in threes and he's sitting there at this spot and I see that threes are actually going to be more abundant later on in the draft, but the points have gone off the board, I want a guy who's going to score me more points or the assists or the blocks or whatever it is that is becoming more scarce depending on what runs have happened in the draft, then I'll use that statistical scarcity bar to tell me what numbers I should be looking at because they're going to be hard, or what categories I should be looking at because they're going to be harder to fill later on. And that can be a real key. Yeah, bank yourself up, get your points early, get a real big head start there. And then you can start getting the guys who get 11 points a game, 10 points a game, but then give you, you know, 6 assists or 1.8 steals or hit 2.5 threes. And to fill out those other areas while your points still have a buffer level, because you're not going, if your points are low early, and it happens a little bit with assists and a little bit with free throw percentage, but if they're low early, you can't catch up. There's just no way that you can catch up enough to, you might catch up to become average or the sixth best team, but that's not cutting it. That's not helping anybody really in that area. You want to be up that top area if you want to be consistently competitive in that category. As I said today, I'm going to talk about the projections. I'm not going to go through every player and how they've projected, but people have asked specific questions about things, so we're going to talk about that. But I do want to reiterate again that when you go to Basketball Monster, to find the projections, up the top of the screen, you'll see a column that says rankings. And then under that rankings, there's a tab that says player rankings, and there's a tab that says projections. Player rankings is what has happened in the past. So at the moment, it's telling us how the players ranked and performed last season, and you can adjust that for any season you want. Projections is what we think is going to happen moving forward. So don't go onto rankings and go, this is not fantasy football, remember. We're not going ahead and go, oh, here's my rankings. I need to rank these players before my drafts. I really despise that term in terms of rankings for drafts. And even when you do look at the projections, you will see a column that says rank. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that this is the order that you should draft these players. As I stress all the time, it is entirely dependent after the first round, and maybe to a degree after the second round, but mainly after the first round, is dependent on who you draft. So there could be a guy sitting there who is ranked 23rd on the board, but a guy who's ranked 35th fits what you need better. You feel more confident about his injury history. You feel better about he's helping you in the categories that are harder to find later or the positions that are harder to find later. Just take that guy. It doesn't matter that he's ranked 10 spots lower. And that becomes more apparent later in the draft. You might be sitting at pick 70 and there's a guy ranked 60th still on the board, but you like the guy that's ranked 80th because of the categorical holes that he fills in your team. And that's totally fine, because we talk about these value differences, and I always look at this, and it's the way we work out the values with standard deviations and standard scores. The difference between the number one ranked player and the number 12 ranked player on a per game basis, we're talking about 0.43 of a point. So 1.18 is the value of the first guy, 0.75 is the value of the 12th guy. So we're talking a pretty significant difference there. Between those two, so 0.43. If I want to go what 0.43 is between the 12th guy and the, how many spots are we talking about there between 12 and if I go 0.43 less, so we're going down to 0.32, we're talking about 18 spots. So you can already see it starting to become a little bit more spread. If we then go 0.43 after that guy who's in 30th spot at a value of 0.32, so we go 0.43 there, we're looking at now I'm testing my own maths, a negative 0.11. And they're the guys who are ranked 78th. So we go 1 to 12, 12 to 30, 30 to 77. And that's the same difference in value between those guys. So the difference between the start of the first round and the end of the first round is the same as the difference between pick 30 and pick 75. And it gets, again, more so from negative 0.11, if we take 0.43 away from that, we go to negative 0.5, which takes us down to pick 180. So from pick 77 to outside the range of a standard draft is the same gap in value as it is between pick 1 and 2. So you might have your last pick and you go, oh, look at this guy, he's ranked 140th, but I like this guy who's ranked 180th. Doesn't matter. They're all so close that it doesn't matter. And that is really important to know when you're drafting and looking in projections. And it's why a rank number can be completely misleading, because it's not telling you who to draft. It's not looking at what's going to fit best your team. That's what the stuff in the draft tracker does: the positional value, the dynamic value, all that sort of stuff, and using your own brains of who is going to be available and who is going to help you. So that's something that is really important. And the other thing that I mentioned on yesterday's show also is that having turnovers on when looking at values of players is a significant skew. In my opinion, if you believe that Otto Porter was a top 25 player last year, then by all means, keep turnovers on as a ranking tool. If you believe that James Harden and Russell Westbrook were the 8th and 9th best player last year, then cool, put turnovers on in your rankings. If you believe that John Wall is the 26th best player, then keep turnovers on. I don't believe that. So when I'm looking at turnovers, I don't want to have turnovers on as something that's influenced, because they influence things significantly, and it's because of the way that turnovers are as a negative category. The guys who don't play have the higher value in turnovers, and that's why it skews it. If you're in a league, you will find that your turnovers might be actually, and when you look at this on the draft track as well, you might be significantly better than everyone else in turnovers. And then, during the draft, okay, let's maybe look for some lower turnover guys later on, so I just don't blow this advantage out of the water. But drafting based on who is going to get me the fewest turnovers is a surefire way to become average or below average in most other categories, in my opinion. Like, you can grab Otto Porter as a 20th ranked guy and you'll be below average in every other category apart from really field goal percentage or 3-point percentage if you're counting that. But you'll just be below average in every other area, and that's just nothing that you want with one of those early picks. So that's, again, if I'm in a 9-category league, I'm turning turnovers off. I am punting that automatically, and you'll see when I bring out the one-man mock draft that Some of those teams are going to have strong turnover teams. It's just the way that it works out. Once your punt assists, your turnovers become strong automatically. But trying to build a turnover team and valuing that the same as every other category, I think ends up leading you astray and causing your team not to be as strong as what it needs to be in head-to-head situations. I've mentioned that plenty of times throughout the course of this podcast. Bobby Madru, who is a loyal live listener, says there's no jerseys in the background today. I'm going for a change. You know why, Bobby, as well, is that all my jerseys, half the players have changed teams. All the jerseys are changing to Nike jerseys this year. So my jerseys are a little bit old. So I'm going to change the back. I'm going to put some other decoration up there behind me at some point. But most of my jerseys are out of date now, which is unfortunate. Maybe I'll give them away to people. We'll see. But that's why the jerseys aren't there. Let's go for a fresh look, which I'm still in the process of setting up. And that's why there is no jersey behind me. On the video version of this show, let's get into the questions that people have asked. And this first question says, it came from Reddit. It was, how do you ensure that the projections you're making are as accurate as possible? It's a good question. And I spend obviously a lot of time on this. This is my full-time job. So I'm obviously monitoring the NBA 365 days of the year. I don't think that is under any question, although some people think that I don't watch any basketball at all. Shout out to those people who leave those comments on Twitter, on YouTube, who think that I don't watch anything and don't know anything that I'm talking about. But that's cool. But this is my job. I do it, every day, all day, and I'm always watching things. But once we get to the end of July and all of August, my mind turns completely to projection. So it's about reading up on teams. So it's going to the local newspapers and reading the Charlotte Observer. It's going and reading Mark Berman in the New York Post. It's going and reading, before he left, Mark Medina over in LA covering the Lakers. It's about going and who else? It's about reading good old Fred Katz for the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's about reading the local papers. It's about reading the national stuff. ESPN, what's Matt Moore saying over on CBS? What's Zach Harper writing about on FanRag? You're reading these sort of opinions as well. And then we go into reading the team sites. So let's go through the SB Nation blogs. Let's go and have a look at your Liberty Ballers to read about the Sixers. What do the writers there say? And there's a lot of very smart people who write for these sites and the editors on these sites. Reading those guys' opinions on the players that came in, what their thoughts are on the rotation. Reading the comments section as well to get an overall idea of what a fan base's thoughts are. All that stuff is really important. So I'll go and read all the SB Nation blogs. I'll go and read the fan-sided stuff. I'll go and read FanRag Sports. I'll do Twitter searches for things. I'll read all of these different things. And then I go and listen to podcasts. I listen to national podcasts. I listen to Zach Lowe. I listen to Dunked On and with Danny and Nate, of course. I listen to the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network for all my team-specific stuff to let all this information soak in. And that's sort of the background of doing it. Then I go and have a look at all the stats and who arrived? How does this team look? If we just transport everyone's stats in from last season, how does that make the team look? Does it balance up? Does it look like a normal team in terms of overall statistical projections? Because we know what a team did under a certain coach. This team plays at this pace. Cool. This team takes this percentage of threes. This team is more aggressive getting steals. This team moves the ball more. They get a higher assist rate. This team is more aggressive blocking shots and making sure it all balances. And with all of these players, we have certain formulas that we apply to them as they get older. Younger players, they generally get to the line more often. Their percentages increase significantly. Their assist rate might go up. Their block rate tends to come down after the first few seasons in the NBA. Older players, things start to decline. Their block rate goes down further. Their steal rate might drop down. Their percentages start to drop at certain ages. So all those things are factored in. And then it's about balancing the team. So James Harden and Chris Paul come together in Houston and you import their stats and do their automatic managing of all those stats based on age and decline and recent form. And we look at one-year averages, two-year averages, three-year averages, last 3 months of the season and weightedly average all that sort of stuff. And we look at it and you look at it and you see, okay, so now Houston is projected to average 5 more assists per game than what they did last year, and they were already at the upper end of assists. They averaged, I believe, 25 assists per game last season. So you go, okay, they're probably not going to average 30 assists per game this year, so it makes sense that Chris Paul and James Harden are going to have to lose some assists. So if we take 2.5 away from here or 2.5 away from Chris Paul, maybe with the way that D'Antoni is going to split things up, we know that one of those guys is going to be on the court at all times. So Eric Gordon will have less ball handling responsibilities. He had a little bit more of that last year when he ran that second unit, maybe with Pat Beverley, he handled the ball a bit more. So maybe he loses some of those assists. And you try and balance things that way, and you don't balance it to be exactly the same, because having Paul and Harden on the same team means that the team probably will move the ball better. Harden was an elite passer, an elite ball mover, but he can only do so much. You have a second guy there, maybe you do get to 26 assists per game, but you're not going to get to 30. And it's about balancing all the statistics that way. So that is what my month of August is looking at all this stuff, looking at numbers, looking at past performances, looking at NBA wowie, on-off numbers. And it's something I'll talk about a little bit later as well. How do all these guys go when they're with certain teammates? How do they go when they're without certain teammates? All that sort of stuff. The next question this person asked me is, do you change your projections during the season because of injuries or whatever? Yes. Yes, as I said, these are changed every day pretty much. There are, we look at stuff and how we projected it and then how things are actually happening and weightedly average those to adjust rate stats and percentages and all that sort of stuff. And then when injuries happen, games played get changed, players' minutes go up. We do short-term projections for the next 2 weeks. We do long-term projections for the full season. So I'll look at the next 2 weeks and we'll adjust things, because obviously when I'm doing the projections for the season, if you added everyone's minutes per game up, it would average more than 240 minutes, which is the amount of minutes that are available in an NBA game. And that's because these players aren't all playing 82 games. So one guy getting 25 minutes at 72 games, that means in the 10 games he misses, someone else has got to take those 25 minutes. So all those minutes come up. But in the short-term projections, it is done on a strict 240 minute per game basis. So instead of having all 15 guys projected for minutes in that time, in that short term, we have 9 guys, 10 guys, 11 guys, depending on how the coach wants to run the rotation. So we have that happening there as well. But this is what my job is. It's watching, it's constantly adjusting all this stuff. And that's how we have what I believe is the best projections in the marketplace or in the world. Maybe I'm being a little bit big-headed there, but that's how I view it, because that's what we do. That's what I do. That's what Ken does. That's what Kyle does. That's what Matt does. That's what Greg does. We all look at this stuff all the time, and we're covering it all the time, and that's how we make those adjustments. So that's a good overview and a good question for me to bring up and discuss when all this happens. Let's go into some specific questions that we got through. And these are people querying my projections, which is totally fine. I'm totally up for people querying it. Hey, because it could be something I missed. I'm looking at 450 players and every single statistical category for those guys. And maybe there's something that doesn't make 100% sense. And often someone will suggest something. I'll go, you know what? That's a pretty good question. That's a really fair point. Maybe I should look into it and do a bit more research and find out, well, hey, my actual thing at the start was right. Or yes, I can see some validity there. Let's give it a slight bump. Let's give it a slight downgrade. First question is, James Johnson seems unlikely to play more than last year with all the guys who need minutes there. Before last year, he was a 15 to 20 minute guy, and he's a slight regression candidate to me. It's a good point. I don't have Johnson playing as much as what he did over the back 3 to 4 months of last season. I think that's an unrealistic expectation to expect him to play over 30 minutes a game, which is what he was doing in that stretch last season. I've got him projected at 29 minutes per game, but I think he was just so incredibly key for what this team did. Yes, Kelly Olynyk is there. Yes, Bam Adebayo is there. Jordan Mickey's there. But Johnson is the guy that I think is still going to be a really key part of that bench unit. And while I like Olynyk a lot, and they did pay Olynyk, they paid Johnson more. And I think that Johnson will still get, he won't get the 30 minutes. I don't believe that he played in that stretch last season, but I think that 29 or 28 and a half to 29 minutes is realistic for him. Yes, he is, I guess, a regression candidate at the age of 30. So maybe he could drop a few things. I do have a few of his stats dropping. I have his points per 36 dropping a little bit. I have his rebounds, his assists, his block rate all dropping this year. So that their rate statistics. So all of those things I've got dropping this season. That is that decline. But I don't see him getting less than 28, definitely. I've got him at 29. But I think that he was so key to what they did that he will continue to play at a fairly high level. But again, if you disagree, you can make custom projections on Basketball Monster, or you can let him slide down draft boards. I don't think he'll be as good as what he was to end last season, but I still think he's going to be a really important player. Dennis Smith Jr., he says 30 minutes seems high given they'll want to give minutes to the vets and will probably edge him up to 30 over this year, but I doubt he'll average that. Really good point. And that seems to be a common thing that people think about Smith and Rick Carlisle, and they're all about they're going to give the minutes to the vets. And my response to that is, the starting point guard for this team last year was an undrafted rookie who's played 40 games in the NBA. So I'm not sure that Yogi Ferrell gets the veteran experience tag over Dennis Smith. Ferrell was fine, but he's not good. He's not a good point guard. He's not a good high upside point guard. He's not a starting caliber point guard in the NBA. JJ Barea is there. Yep, JJ's fine. He plays off the ball a bit. He's a handy guy, but he thrives in a 19 to 20 minute role. That's about it. Devin Harris can't stay healthy, no good anymore. Barely plays, and he's not even a point guard anymore. He plays more at the two and the three. I've got Smith at 30. I thought I was maybe being a little bit cautious with that, to be honest. I thought he could go 31 or 32, and I thought, no, there is that Carlisle factor. So that bumped me to 30. Maybe he plays 29. I'm pretty certain that once we hit February, he'll be playing 33 a night, and he might start off at 27 a night to start the season. But to me, that averages out to the 30. But I can understand the reluctance of that. The other thing with Dennis Smith, and I talked about this on the podcast with Matt yesterday, if you turn turnovers on in the ranking, he drops 80 spots from 100 to like 180. And that's ludicrous. There is no way that you're picking him at 180. You take him in that 100 range, and you think that, you know what, he could actually jump 30, 40 spots if everything goes right. But I do understand the Carlisle concern, but again, we're not talking about a solid veteran point guard there. Jeremy Lin is not playing there, who'd be a great example for that. We're not talking about Darren Collison there as a starter, who's a veteran point guard. You've got Yogi Ferrell. You've got Seth Curry in his third season. We're not talking about guys who are grizzled veterans who have shown they know how to do it. We've got an electric talent who Rick Carlisle likes, the Mavs are high on, and there'll be shit moments for Smith during the season. Carlisle will bench him. He will restrict his minutes. But overall, I think that he does get to that 30-minute mark. Billy Hernan Gomez says, Knicks still have the same center issues as last season, maybe more, if Hornacek wants to play Porzingis at center.
Porzingis.
And it was Phil that wasn't wanting that. He says, 26 minutes might be a little bit high for Billy with that competition and the history. And there is definitely a risk with Hernan Gomez. I have mentioned that you know, I'm not 100% certain on his projection. And we do have a confidence rating on the projection. So I'm not 100% locked in on him being that guy. But I don't think 26 minutes. I know some people are thinking he's just going to play 30 or not. And to me, that's craziness. I cannot see him getting that much playing time. We know that Noah's missing the first 12 games of the season to begin with. So that's something that's already happening. And I'm just not sure how much they're going to be able to play Noah. They're not going to be able to play him 30 minutes a night. And I do get the feeling that Kylo Quinn, unfortunately, might be removed from the rotation a little bit this year. I that's the feeling I get. I think they're pretty decently high on Billy. And I think that they might take O'Quinn out of the rotation on some nights because the three-man center rotation was bullshit last season. Hernan Gomez is now in his second year. I don't think he's getting 30 minutes a night. I think he's a fine option though for the 25 to 26, and maybe 26 is too high. But Hernan Gomez, yeah, he was pretty solid in his minutes to end the season, and I think that you know again it could be high. But I do think that O'Quinn may be out of the rotation. Joe Ingles, his ranking seems high. There's that ranking word again. He says a combination of that he still might not get 30 minutes with Rocket Rodney, Donovan Mitchell, Alec Burks, Tarbo, and Joe Johnson to soak up the minutes. But with him, his per minutes are jumping a lot. Maybe it's the Rubio effect, but they have less overall playmaking, losing Hayward. Ingles is not a high usage player, and at his age, I question the jump. Now, this is something that is important to note. Steals are a category that can be found late in drafts, and players also with high steal rates get a huge, huge boost in ranking numbers. Robert Covington is a guy that, because of his really high steal numbers, is a guy that is inside the top 40. Marcus Smart is inside the top 80 due to steals. You will see pretty much any of the guys where people go, you know what, he's probably a bit high. It's because of steals, because these guys, especially towards the end of draft, they're just not getting steals. So you find someone who gets 1.5, 1.6 steals, then they jump significantly in the rankings. And I've got Ingles, who's comfortably a top 80 player if you're just looking at ranking. But there is absolutely no situation in the world where I would take Joe Ingles at pick 80. Like none. I would not take him at pick 75. I would take him with a late pick. And you know, if someone grabs him at pick 90, I go, oh well, you know what, bad luck. I missed out. But his value is coming from his steal numbers as a real positive, steals and threes, which you will be able to find steals off the wire, and you definitely will be able to find threes off the wire. Now, in breaking down the minutes, I still think that Joe gets 30, not more than 30 a game, even with those other guys there. I think he starts alongside Rocket, and Donovan Mitchell is more of a 1-2. Joe Johnson will play as the backup four, and Tarbo will be the backup behind Ingles. Maybe he only plays 28 tonight. That is a possibility, but we saw him playing, you know, the last month of the regular season last year, he played 30 minutes a night. He started in the playoffs and was playing, you know, 30-plus minutes a night. I'm pretty confident that he gets to that 29.5 to 30-minute mark. Now, he said that his per minutes have all jumped. Now, what has jumped is his per minute, his per 36 points. That I've got that jumping a lot, and I've got his usage jumping significantly from 13 up to 18. But he did end last regular season with a usage of 15. And with Gordon Hayward gone, I think he is taking on some more shots. He is still a below average usage player. But apart from the scoring numbers, like I've got his points and his threes per 36 going up, that's a consequence of taking more shots. His rebounds are the same, his steals are the same, his blocks are the same, and I've got his assists going up by 0.2 per 36 minutes, taking on that extra playmaking role that Hayward had, yeah, allowing his assist numbers to rise slightly. So that's where I've got him. So it's not like I'm bumping his per minute numbers significantly. It's the points, because he's got him taking more shots. I've got his efficiency dropping in this case because of that. And I don't see him. I don't see him being able to increase it right across the board. So it is a fair point, but I do stand by that projection on Ingles at this point. I don't. There's no way that you take him at what that rank number looks like, because again, the rank is not what's important here. There's no way that you take him at that area. Had a question come in about DeAndre Jordan. It says a career high in field goals for DeAndre Jordan without Chris Paul seems odd to me. So I looked into it, and eventually he said field goals. I thought he meant field goal attempts. So I had a look, and I said, post-break last year, DeAndre Jordan took 7.5 field goal attempts per game, and I bumped him up a little bit to 7.9. I said, yeah, maybe that's a little bit too high. And he said, I meant field goal percentage. Without Chris Paul, I would guess he gets worse looks and less dunks. So I looked that up, which you do on NBA Wowie. Last year, when DeAndre Jordan shared the court with Chris Paul, he had a 71% field goal percentage, which is bananas. It's so high. When he wasn't on the court with Chris Paul, his field goal percentage went up to 72.3. So the narrative that people assume and throw out there that, oh, without Chris Paul, he's not going to get as good looks and he's not going to be as efficient, was 100% bullshit last season. Now, I'm not saying that that won't be the case this year, but the evidence from last year was that it was bullshit, that it was incorrect, and that it's absolutely something that didn't happen. He actually became more efficient when he wasn't on the court with Chris Paul. Blake Griffin is still a good passer. Milos Teodosic, one of the best passers in the NBA. You've still got other guys there who can feed him the ball. And DeAndre Jordan's not all of a sudden going to become this massive post-up guy and start taking long-range jumpers. He's going to be doing a similar thing. He's going to be getting his putbacks. So, look, maybe I had his field goal percentage up a little bit high, and I have adjusted that and brought it back down a little bit. But the theory or the idea that him playing without Chris Paul isn't going to really impact his field goal percentage, that didn't bear out at all last season, which seems counterintuitive, but it's exactly what happened. So that's something to have a look at there. Had this one here. Devin Booker is at 25th. If you punt field goal percentage, rebounds, blocks, and turnovers, would you consider taking him in the fourth round? I think he could exceed projections. I don't think I would take him in the fourth round necessarily. I understand he's at 25th if you punt those categories. And that's fine. I said, you know, in what area do you see Devin Booker exceeding his projections? And this bloke says, I think I can see him exceeding it in points, in field goal percentage, in free throw percentage, and free throw attempt rate, which are all things that I totally understand, and Booker could do that. The problem with all of that is, for most people's situations, is it doesn't necessarily, you know, help him significantly, because his rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, all that's going to be the same. But if his scoring and scoring efficiency does rise, then sure, Devin Booker could be a top 50 player. And in fact, I've only got him just outside that top 50 zone anyway. But if he gets to the, I've got him getting to the line a little bit more. And it really does change depending on what happens with Bledsoe. If Bledsoe's out for half the season that he was last year, then his scoring, he probably averages 25 a game. But with Bledsoe there, it's probably going to be harder for him to average over 24 per game. So that's it's going to drop his field goal attempts. It's going to drop his free throw attempts. It might increase his efficiency. So there is a little bit of a query there, but I don't have him too far outside that top 50 anyway. And we've got this one here. Wall at 26 is a joke. Now, not to harp on this fact, but when I put these ranks in, these are not me going, who's the 26th best player? Probably John Wall. It's not how any of it works. It's not me looking and going, number one is going to be Harden. Number one is going to be, number two is going to be Curry. Number three, it's not how it's done. Every player goes in and has their numbers projected out. And then all that is done with standard scores, which if you go on Google what a standard score is, or a Z score, or a Z score for you Americans, and see what it is, it's basically a score based on means and standard deviations. And then all those values for each category, points, threes, rebounds, whatever categories you've got happening in your league, they're all added up and averaged, and that gives the value. And then that the players are then put in order of that value, and that gives them the rank. There is no subjectivity with the ranking numbers. So John Wall, I did not put him at pick number 26. And again, that is including turnovers. If you take turnovers off, I think he's the 15th ranked player. And that's the exact range that you should be looking at for John Wall. There is no, there's not 25 better players in fantasy or in the NBA than John Wall. Now, his argument, I said back, you know, it's okay, what about his projection do you disagree with? He said, I don't think his field goal percentage drops as drastically as you projected. And that's fair enough, because last year he shot 45% from the field. I've got him back to about 43.5%, I think, this year, which falls in line basically with what he's done throughout the majority of his career. I've got him at 44%, so dropping like a percent, 1.2% this season. Previously, his previous seasons have been 42 and 43 and 41, those sort of numbers. Last year, he did go up to 45, and I thought often with these things, a one-year outlier, it can go either way. So it can either stay that way or it can drop back, and we've seen fluctuations in percentages quite significant last year, especially with free throw percentage among many players, having 8, 9, 10% drops, or players sometimes increasing their numbers like CJ McCollum did a few years ago, or Kent Bazemore increasing their field goal percentage by 7 or 8%. So it is a hard one to get a hang of, and it does impact our numbers quite a bit. But again, John Wall is not a 26th ranked player. I don't think there are 25 guys better than him. It was all to do with that turnover category, and I've got him 15th with his numbers. And again, if you look at his numbers, I've got him averaging 23, 4, and 11 with 1.9 steals, 1.33, shooting 44, and 80 is his percentages. Yeah, I think they're pretty fair projection numbers for John Wall. And if you want to argue about the field goal percentage, it takes him from 15th to maybe 13th or 12th. And that's totally fine. But those guys in that start of the second round range, Kyrie, Lillard, Wall, Chris Paul, they're all so bloody close that it doesn't really make that much of a difference between those guys. Got another one here about Milos Teodosic. He says, I follow Eurobasket and he has the NBA three-point range. He gets assists, steals, and points. What categories are more difficult to get in the later rounds? It's points, assists. He says steals. It's not really steals. It's more points and assists. And yeah, look, I've got Teodosic ranked just outside that top 100 based on his projections. Clearly, that's where he fits in. But that's only in limited numbers, like 25 minutes per game, because I think his assist numbers are going to be that good. I think he's going to be able to rack up those assists for this team, giving DeAndre Jordan those easy looks, which helps keep his field goal percentage up there. But if he wins a job, the starting job, and plays 30 a night over Austin Rivers or over Patrick Beverley, then he vaults significantly into the top 70. I love Teodosic as a late pick. Getting assists late, getting 5-plus assists, 6-plus assists in your last two picks is almost unheard of. Yeah, his defense is going to be piss poor, and that might limit his minutes, but it's not going to impact us too much in fantasy. It's getting those assists, getting those threes, and hopefully he can have a level of efficiency which enables him to be a useful player. I love that as a last pick. As a second last pick, I really do like Teodosic there. It's all just going to be about his minutes. Couple more questions here. Why are Mo Harkless's points and steals projected to drop from about 12.5 and 1 per 36 to about 9.5 and 0.7? The numbers there really aren't important, but the reason that his numbers are projected to decrease is because once Yusuf Nurkic came, his usage sunk like an anchor. He just didn't take any shots anymore. His steal rate was really elevated at the start of the last year. He became less engaged at the end of the year. That dropped. We saw him move to the bench as they went with different lineups at times. Evan Turner starting, and Noah Vonleh in that starting lineup, and he's just not going to get the same shot attempts with Nurkic there in place of Plumlee. So that's why I've got Mo Harkless's numbers dropping this year. I still don't mind Harkless as a late pick, because with Alan Crabb gone, he is going to have to play some more minutes. But I think his early season numbers, or even his total season numbers on a per minute basis, they're probably going to be harder to keep up just because of the arrival of Nurkic and those reduced field goal attempts. Got Vucevic. Yeah, a question about Nick Vucevic. Why are his projections so much higher this year than last year? He says, is it the 1.2 more minutes? Yes, that's part of it. He played only 28 minutes per game last year. I've got him at 30 because Frank Vogel stuffed him around for the first 3 months of the season. And then he realized, like everyone should have, that Bismack Biyombo is terrible and that there's no way that Biyombo should have been playing equal minutes with Vuce. So I'm feeling pretty confident that Vuce is going to get his 30 a night. The other reason is that almost inexplicably, Vucevic shot like 7-8% worse from the free throw line last year and about 6% worse from the field. I just don't think that those horrific percentage drops are going to continue. So I've got him bouncing back closer to the mean level of what he's done throughout his career. Maybe he's not back to a 51% field goal guy, but I'm pretty bloody sure he won't be under 70% from the free throw line. So yeah, that's why he looks to be a top 40 guy, because the minutes are more stable, and I think his percentages bounce back. Now, if the percentages don't bounce back, then his value drops significantly. But I feel like some of those percentage issues may have been a confidence problem with the benching, the signing of Biyombo, and I think he should feel a lot more confident in that this season. Got another one here. The rank seems low for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, given that he's playing with a better passing point guard ball versus Reggie Jackson. He's in a contract year and in a better culture. His efficiency could also pick up. My response to that was, he was in a contract year last year. So that argument goes out the window to me immediately. Yes, it's a contract year this year. It was one last year. Didn't change anything. Better culture, debatable. Who knows? Like, it's really hard. There were some issues with Jackson, obviously, in the Pistons locker room. So maybe the Lakers are better, but it's not like the Lakers have been smooth sailing over the last 4 or 5 years. But my problem with KCP is what does he do? He gets a lot of shots. He doesn't hit him all that efficiently. Maybe ball does help him in that respect. Maybe ball does help his efficiency. Won't help his rebounding. Won't help his assists. Won't help his steals. Won't help his blocks. Won't help any of those things. So, you know, I think that KCP is not the number one option on this team. It'll be Brook Lopez. And then you'll have Ball, and then you'll have Ingram there as well, and you'll have Randall taking his shots. I just don't think that Caldwell Pope's ceiling for fantasy is very high at all. You're welcome to take him. He will get some points. He will get some threes. Mediocre steals, but that's it. And to me, that really limits him as a fantasy guy. So I'm not putting a massive amount of stock in having a better point guard, which, again, is completely debatable because Lonzo Ball hasn't played a single game yet. Yes, he's a better passer, but what if he just completely falls apart? Which is a low possibility, but it could happen. And it's just not affecting his other areas. It's not going to mean that he gets more assists. It's not going to mean that he's a better rebounder all of a sudden. I do have KCP shooting at a career high for true shooting this season. I do have his attempts going up slightly also, but I'm just not sure that in those other areas that Lonzo is going to have a big increase. Got a question here saying, how do you expect Miles Turner to increase all categories and still reduce turnovers from last year? That seems unlikely, and that's a fair point. His usage will go up, and in usage is turnovers. What we often see with players is their turnover rate is fairly high as a rookie. It decreases significantly into the second year, does the same thing into the third year. So I've got him about a similar turnover number than last year, very similar. I think it's slightly lower, because what I believe is that the decrease in turnover rate that you get from the second to third year will be offset a little bit by his increase in usage and his increase in responsibility. So it keeps it more or less the same. So that's the reason there. And also, if the other categories increase, like if his rebounding increases, if his block numbers increase, if his efficiency increases, that shouldn't have any impact on turnovers whatsoever. It's more that, you know, his shot attempts means he has the ball in his hands more, so that might increase the turnovers. But as I said, people become smarter, they become better players, they become more careful with the ball, and that then turnovers is one of those categories that drops year on year through the first, or through a player's rookie contract pretty much. How come you don't have Thaddeus Young in the top 50? You don't see his usage going up with Paul George gone. He was a top 50 guy before getting injured last year. Yes, he was. He was a top 50 guy because he was getting a crazy amount of steals, like 2.4 steals per game. There was a stretch where he was getting 3 steals a game. He hurt his wrist and he came back at the second half of the year and was getting 1 steal a game. His value is almost entirely dependent on what he does with his steals. It's as simple as that. I also think that the Pacers might want to see a little bit of Domantas Sabonis at power forward. I think Thad gets the majority of that time there. But there's also a risk that Young gets traded at some point during this season. I think that's a significant risk. But to me, his value is almost entirely dependent on what he does with his steals. He goes back to 1.9 steals, a top 40 guy potentially. He, you know, drops off and is a 1.3 steals guy, then he's outside the top 80. But it is a fair call. I think Young is getting undervalued in certain drafts. And I saw someone said that he went undrafted in a 10-team league, which is bananas. There's no way that should happen. He will start. He should play 30 to 31 minutes a night. But in terms of getting to that top 50, I think he's still going to be the third offensive option behind Turner and behind Oladipo. They're the guys who get the majority of that usage bump. Collison gets some usage there as well. So the Pacers aren't as terrible as what people... They're not great, but they're not as terrible as what people think. The hole he got, I guess, there is at small forward, but Collison, Oladipo, Turner, and Young, yeah, decent guys to get decent usage, and Young is not a high usage guy at the best of times, so I don't see him getting such a significantly massive boost in what he does. Whiteside seems much lower than I expected him to be, and that's because of his lowered block rate. Again, if you punt free throws, though, he moves comfortably into the top 20, but it's because players, when they play more minutes and they become more relied upon, they become more mature and more experienced in the NBA, their block rate drops. We saw his block rate drop at a massive, massive rate last year and did not expect it to drop anywhere near that much. So I've got it dropping just a little bit further this season as he, becomes more confident, and smarter instead of chasing block numbers and playing better defense. So that's why I've got Whiteside, yeah, maybe not as high as what some people expected. He clearly has the potential to go above that, but with a little bit more depth there, with Olynyk around, with Johnson around, with Adebayo there, maybe, and we saw Spoelstra have issues with Whiteside last year and wouldn't play him big minutes, even though, yeah, there wasn't a huge amount of good talent there. He played 32.5 minutes per game last year, but down the stretch it was under 32, so the minutes did start to decrease. So it's not a it's not a fait accompli that he starts playing big minutes. And I do have his block rate at a similar number to last season. It's just that I've got him playing one less minute this year because of that extra depth in the front court. I took a minute off him, a minute off what Johnson did, just with the addition of Olynyk and those sort of guys. So that's the reason there. He says, Covington is such a solid player, but 32 overall seems far too steep. He was 37th last year with much less talent around him. And agree. You do not take Robert Covington at pick 32. That is as simple as it gets. I've got Covington. Now, Covington had some issues last year. He had some shooting problems earlier in the year. I know there's more talent around him, but Covington's value comes from steals. It comes from blocks. It comes from rebounds. To me, in the rebounds, look, maybe in the rebounds do take a little bit of a hit with Simmons and Embiid both there, but the steals don't. He's going to be the primary perimeter defender on this team. I think that he's still getting his big chunk of minutes. He's going to hit his threes, and he's going to be a weak side shot blocker for this team. His value is not predicated on usage whatsoever. It doesn't matter to me that Fultz is getting the shots or Simmons is getting bulks of shots. Covington doesn't. He had a tiny usage last year. He averaged like 12 points a game and still was a player that was a top 50 guy. And that's sort of what he does based on steals and blocks. But there is no way that you take him at that pick. Again, the steals do really inflate that. You know, 1.9 steals I've got him projected at. It gives him a standard score of 2.44, which is a huge, huge number for that category. I'm talking about 2.44 in the points category. James Harden's value is 2.34. So that just shows you how big, getting 1.9 steals per game, how big that actually is and how much that influences a player's rank. If I'm doing this now, if I punt steals in the projections and have a look where Covington goes to, because I'm streaming this live, this internet can't handle two things at once, so it takes a while for that to start to happen. Eventually this will come up and tell me, but that's you'll see Covington drop from a guy that's around 34 or 32, depending on your league settings and league size, in that third round range. It drops him to 64th. So that just shows you how big of an impact that steals category has. And yeah, that's again just if it's one category that's really influencing players that jumps them a lot up the ranks, especially if they don't have any real big negatives in other areas, that is something to pay some attention to. I think that just about does it for today's podcast. If you have any more questions, actually, one more. I've got Juz Mitchell says, have you talked about Taurean Prince or any of the potentially overlooked Atlanta Hawks? Well, not in this podcast, but I did an entire 40-minute podcast on the Atlanta Hawks at the end of last week, Juz, and you can listen to all my thoughts there. Taurean Prince is a pretty easy choice, I think, for a top 100 guy. Dennis Schroeder is a top 50 guy. Deadman can be a standard league player. Ilyasova is not a bad early choice. John Collins is going to be a great later season sort of player. So I've talked about them a lot. And he says, were they difficult to predict who's going to shine this year? Not really, because I think their positions are pretty locked in. Schroeder, Bazemore, Prince, Ilyasova, and Dedmon with Collins taking over from Ilyasova later in the year. So they lost a lot of talent, but I think that who their main guys are pretty locked in. It's going to be Schroeder. It's going to be Prince getting a boost. It's going to be Dedmon doing his thing. Bazemore hopefully can improve on what was a terrible season. But I did do a whole podcast on the Hawks, Juz, so you can go and have a listen to that. If you are subscribing to Basketball Monster, you'll see a referral code on the site. That's just my name. It just tells my boss where the people are coming from when they sign up to the site. So it's not a discount code. It's just saying where did you come from, and entering my name in there, I guess helps me out and shows that you came from listening to this podcast or follow me on Twitter or wherever it may be. So if you are signing up to Basketball Monster, just enter that referral code, Josh, and leave a review for this podcast. That would be great. 5-star review, awesome. Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and of course now on Spotify as well. That would be a great way to help out the show. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Sam Decker.